And good morning to everyone. I should note that Justice Wright will not be participating on any of today's cases. With that in mind, let us proceed. The first case of the day is TransCanada Keystone Pipeline LP versus, there are various, there are actually four different consolidated appeals for argument. We'll be doing them all together. Each side has up to 20 minutes. Mr. Powers, good morning to you.
May it please the court, counsel. Good morning. Jim Powers, to represent McGrath North, along with Patrick Pepper, is with me today on behalf of the appellate, and all the cases are going to be heard today. Prior to getting into the issues of the case, I think it's helpful to discuss a little bit of the background on how we got here. All the appeals today arise out of the legal proceedings which occurred after this court's ruling in Thompson v. Heineman in January 2015. After that ruling, Keystone initiated eminent domain proceedings, and the Conanese filed suit raising similar issues that have been raised in Thompson v. Heineman, the Thompson v. Heineman case, challenging Keystone's right to proceed. Keystone and the Conanese entered into a stipulation to enjoin the eminent domain proceedings pending the outcome of the litigation challenging Keystone's right to proceed. Keystone eventually dismissed without prejudice all the eminent domain proceedings and filed an application with the Public Service Commission. Prior to the dismissal of the eminent domain actions, no appraisers were ever sworn and no hearings were held on land values. After the dismissal, the landowners filed applications for attorney fees pursuant to NEVRAP Stat 76726, and all the appeals today arise out of the application for those attorney fees. 76726 is really the crux of why we're here today. It's a unique statute. There's none other like it in Nebraska. The language of the statute provides that upon abandonment, a condominee can file an application for reimbursement of reasonable attorney fees that are actually incurred against an agency of the state of Nebraska.
Are you contesting at this stage that there was or was not an abandonment?
No, Justice Gossett, we are not contesting that, nor are we contesting the reasonableness of the fees that are charged.
All right.
The question before the court really today and subject of the appeal on in all four cases on different forms is whether the affidavit evidence is admissible and whether the condominees met the burden of proof under the statute.
How would you have it prove up?
I would have live testimony of the rules of evidence apply, as in any other proceeding where it's a sole issue to be tried.
In some of the later cases, didn't TransCanada offer affidavit evidence at the hearings as well?
TransCanada did, but we objected throughout this case at the outset to the affidavit evidence, made it clear we did not believe affidavit evidence should be allowed, and would have been perfectly comfortable if the court had struck TransCanada's affidavit evidence. I don't think that issue, I think that the reason there's a lot of attorney fee statutes in Nebraska, or cases, excuse me, that have been decided by this court rely on attorney fees being proven by affidavit. We're not saying that those cases need to be overruled. We're saying that this statute is very unique. It's not a general attorney fee statute. The legislature enacted this and used specific words. First, it said reimbursement, and also said actually incurred. That's not the general language. And we think the reason that is that because it allows attorney fees against agencies of the state.
Why do those words necessarily involve live testimony to establish entitlement?
Those words don't necessarily require live testimony, but the fact is this statute requires live testimony because when you have a preceding...
Those words in the statute, is that what you are relying on?
Yes.
Okay. And why do those words and or the statute in its entirety require live testimony?
Because when there's a hearing, an application for attorney fees, an eminent domain proceeding pursuant to this this section, 7261, there is no other proceeding. The eminent domain action is abandoned. There's no other testimony. It's not collateral. It's not a 25-1244 motion or something else where there's been a final judgment and the attorney fees motion or hearing is part of something else. This was, Judge Kosacek exactly found that this was the only matter to be tried that day. And because of that, it was a final order. In fact, it's a final order, and that's why we're here. It's the only proceeding that there was any evidence in any hearing in the county courts. And that's why it's unique. Why it's required.
In the county court, was there any objection to affidavit testimony or request for live testimony during the actual hearing itself?
Yes, there was. It's in the record. I objected at the very first hearing in Holt County and said, the affidavits are hearsay, should not be allowed. We objected to them. We also objected to writing. We objected on the record at every one of these. There's a written objection in the record on every case.
Didn't the written objection come after the hearing?
Well, it was by agreement. Well, there's two. The written objection, we told the court in the very first hearing, we realized there was a series of hearings, and the same issues were arising. And the first hearing, we made the record, right, the record reflects my objection on the record that there is to the use of affidavit as evidence in this proceeding. Afterwards, the parties, the objections were made, and then the written objection by agreement was allowed to be submitted by both sides to the evidence. With respect to Judge Kosacek's finding that we waived the objection, we did everything we could at the county court hearing. We objected on the record. The judge took it under advisement. He obviously overruled it because he awarded attorney fees based on the affidavit evidence. He gave every indication to me that he was going to rule on the evidence. To find that we waived it after the fact, when the order comes out and the judge issues an award of attorney fees, we think was error. Well, so the other part of this is not only whether it's affidavit testimony is allowed, is what is the burden on the condemnees here? And why is it different than what courts normally hear? And the reason is that given the affidavit evidence that was submitted, even by Judge Kosacek, he painstakingly reviewed the evidence before the court. And he found that the condemnees had failed to show that fees were actually incurred. And by actually incurred, what does that mean? It means they had to establish there was a legal obligation, pay a fee, an agreement on the terms of that engagement.
And what do you think is missing here? What is necessary to show that they were incurred?
We think there has to be a fee agreement. What's missing is an agreement at the outset of the representation that specifies the understanding of the engagement, that the fees are going to be, that the client will be obligated to fees that are incurred after that point in time. There's no evidence of that.
Your briefs seem to suggest that the fees actually need to be paid. Are you taking a different position today?
No, we're not. With the statutes, that's the other aspect, I just haven't gotten to that yet. The statute says reimbursement. That means to repay. We think those fees that's the other evidence that would be submitted. We would expect it to see, and we really don't think the burden is very difficult under the statute. We expect it to see fee agreements, invoices, payment, and application for reimbursement. We didn't see anything like that. We saw general statements and affidavits. The clients felt, based on the success of the outcome, that they should be, that TransCanada should be obligated to pay Mr. Domina's firm's the fees.
Is there a difference between a reimbursement and a fee?
Reimbursement and a fee?
I'm a little rusty on the private sector billing habits. Cost and fees.
There's no difference between the cost and the fees.
Okay.
We think they would have had to show reimbursement of both.
Okay.
And Judge Kosacek specifically found, and Judge Hemmingen, Chief Judge, this goes to you, what is missing from the evidence is any engagement letter, contract, or fee agreement establishing any landowner obligation to pay any amount of the services rendered. The Jordy affidavit makes a passing reference to our agreement with all the landowners. no details of that agreement were disclosed, and nor was that agreement ever in any of the cases provided. He went on to say there's no evidence establishing what hourly rate that the clients have agreed to pay. There was no evidence that any landowner actually incurred any fee. The judge relied on a California case cited in our brief, Andre versus City of Sacramento. And in that case, the attorney, there had been a condemnation hearing and award, and the lower court had allowed a fee application. And the California appellate court, in a statute which required actually incurred, same language, if abandoned. In fact, that language is found almost in all eminent domain statutes, common. And we think the reason that's there is because these awards are against usually state agencies.
If it's common language, what do most other courts, what interpretation do they give to that actually incurred? Do they require receipts, canceled checks? What sort of evidence do most courts require?
Most courts require evidence of a contract that the client is required. So when the fees can't be based on outcome determined.
So contractual obligation being
yes.
proven or the contract itself being offered?
Well, the contractual, the contract itself should be offered if the details of the contract are not sufficient. In other words, they have to establish a contract, and the contract has to say what the terms of the engagement are. It's
yes.
not just I think they should be paid for the result. The Eighth Circuit, and this Judge Gilbride relied on this case, in U.S. versus 122 acres of land, 856 F. Second 56, there had been a jury award. The federal government has a very similar statute, abandonment and actually incurred language. In that case, the jury came back with an award over $1 million. The company, after it got $1 million, the federal government abandoned it and elected not to proceed. The county filed for attorney fees, lower court gave it, and the Eighth Circuit said because it was a contingency fee agreement, there can be no fee award. It's not a question whether the work was done. It's a question that the client agreed at the get-go to pay a certain amount of fees, had a legal obligation. You'll find these affidavits that a lot of them say that because of the success, we think that TransCanada should pay. The fee application contained a blended rate. Judge Trojicek specifically found that they never, there's no evidence anyone agreed to a blended rate with respect to the fees.
How did the district court come up with the number that they awarded?
That was based on the evidence submitted by Mr. Donner.
And was there an equal share of all the landowners?
Yeah, there was a pro rata rate divided among the landowners. And that's how, and through the affidavit testimony. And because this is a unique
statute. Is that based on the affidavits of the various lawyers?
Yes. And again, because the statute requires something different, it should be strictly construed. It's an attorney fee statute. There's a strong public policy in this state against awarding attorney fees. But this burden is not that difficult. What you've seen is the affidavits that have talked all around. What was the fee agreement? It's never established. Why do we need live testimony? You can see what can be done with affidavits, but no one can establish how it was actually incurred and how they got to the... What did the landowners expect? What did they agree to pay? When did they enter into this agreement?
Mr. Powers, are you taking the position that the agreement cannot be oral?
We are not.
All right. The other thing I want to ask you about is the quotation from the landowner's affidavit that says, we are indebted to them for the success they achieved and agree that the fees they seek for services are the landowner's reasonable obligations. We want TransCanada to be ordered to pay this sum along with expenses incurred on our behalf. Why is that not sufficient to establish a legal obligation as opposed to a mere moral obligation?
Because it doesn't define exactly what that agreement was at the outset. They say that they may owe it, but what do they owe? What was the agreement when they started? What was the rate? What was the understanding? That does not give the specifics of what the arrangement was between the client and the lawyer. And that's why, because it's after the fact that they agree that TransCanada should pay the fees. They didn't have an agreement. Where's the agreement that started this? And that's what the history of this case. By the way, there's 5 district court judges have looked at this. 3 district court judges found the evidence was insufficient to support the award and remanded it back. 4 of those cases are here for you today. 2, Judge McBride, Judge Kozacek had sent it back. 2 affirmed it. The other one is in Antelope County, Judge Johnson. He filed the affidavits inadmissible, and then he sent that back for further proceedings. But the essence of this is that just saying I'm obligated to pay is not enough. That may establish some sort of obligation, but to be a you ask if the agreement could be oral. If it's definite, if it's clear, and that's what the agreements are. But an oral agreement that does not specify is really no agreement at all. It's illusory. It's just a promise of what we don't know what the fees will be. Decide after the fact based on success. This statute demands more.
Can the agreement morph through the proceedings? That is, as during the course of the time the cases are pending?
Well, I guess it depends what the agreement was to start with. I'm not sure what morph. If they have a definite agreement, it can be amended to reflect changes that happen during the course of litigation.
A different deal between client and attorney.
I don't think the deal itself can change. You can add, depending on the circumstance, it could, but you have to start with the deal before you can change the deal. And there's no evidence they had a clear contract that entitles them to, that shows they actually incurred the fees from the beginning. I'd like to reserve the rest of my time.
Thank you. If I could.
Thank you very much. Mr. Domina, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. You held in Black versus Brooks in 2013 that never in the history of this Court have you required that an attorney's fee be provided to justify an award of fees under a statute that authorizes them. There has never been a public policy in this state against awarding attorney's fees where the legislature authorizes them. We are here today on behalf of 71 landowners who are appellees in 40 separate cases in which every county court judge ruled in their favor, finding that Section 76-726 justified an award of $8,841 in attorney's fees and expenses for defending their land against TransCanada Keystone XL Pipeline. Those trial judges received affidavit evidence. TransCanada's lawyers asked for permission to file objections after the fact. We consented. They did. The affidavits were received by the trial courts, the county courts. The issue that was raised in the district court was whether the affidavits are hearsay. The answer to that question turns on whether these attorney's fee proceedings are collateral to the original case. Each of the 40 original cases sought to take land away from our clients. Each one of those cases posed 2 issues. Number 1, will the condemnation be permitted? And number 2, if so, what will our clients be paid as just compensation? At the end of each of those cases, no matter how they came out, so long as the landowner prevailed in some way, or the cases were dismissed by TransCanada, which for purposes of this statute is an agency under the terms of the statute, the landowners were entitled to file a motion to seek attorney's fees. We are here today not on the ruling on the merits, but on the rulings of the county courts, then the district courts, on the motions. The attorney's fees here could not be more collateral to the original proceedings than they are. Attorney's fees would be the direct object of a lawsuit where a lawyer sues a client to recover a fee. There might be breach of contract cases where the primary element of damage sought for the breach is attorney's fees. Maybe even a tort case, although it's hard for me to imagine one of those. But not this kind of case. In this case, the other side argues that we should have a new trial with new live witnesses and new proceedings in all cases in which the only question before the court on the day of the hearing is the question of attorney's fees. One of the statutes in our jurisprudence is section 251801. It authorizes attorney's fees in collection cases where a demand is made in advance and the amount in controversy is under $4,000. They would turn the courts of this state into locations at which lawyers would litigate fees for lawyers, which would take more time, more energy, and more effort than the original collection case, or in this kind of a proceeding, the original eminent domain proceeding. I tried to catalog the number of different kinds of cases among the hundreds you've decided since statehood on this issue that involved affidavit evidence, and I ran out of energy at about 46 different kinds of actions that would, under their view, require evidence. And it occurred to me as I thought about that, that you would need a witness stand in this courtroom more often than twice per century for impeachment cases if you had to try the attorney's fees applications you decide in affidavits, which would be the logical extension of their view.
Mr. Dominic, may we assume for the moment that the evidence was properly before the court and that actually incurred doesn't extend so far as actual payment. Would you also agree that a mere moral obligation would not be sufficient to actually incur an attorney's fee?
Yes, I would agree with that. I don't think there's anywhere in the law where the law enforces a mere moral obligation. And that's because the law and morality are not necessarily coincidental.
Now, with that understanding in mind, you heard me quote the quotation that appears in your brief in each of the cases and asked your opposing counsel about that. I want to ask you, what is it about that language that establishes a legal obligation as opposed to a mere moral obligation?
I am the author of that language. I wrote that sentence for the express purpose of permitting, requesting, and if they consented, having the landowners affirm their agreement that they were responsible for the fee sought. That was done after the amount sought was disclosed, and it was done with full awareness of the fact that they were acknowledging their obligation to pay because they had requested legal services and had received them and had agreed that they would share them in equal amounts among all of them, regardless of the number of acres or linear feet at issue in their case. When Mr. Donovan gave his affidavit in York County, Your Honor, Exhibit 6 in the York County Bill of Exceptions, for the first time, the landowners collectively made a decision to disclose the fact that they all have a written fee agreement. That decision wasn't made at the time of Holt County. It was made at the time of the hearing in York County, which came much later.
Is there anything in any of the affidavits that makes clear in the record what the fee arrangement was?
Yes, there is. Each of the landowner affidavits, I believe I'm right, that each of them acknowledges that it is a shared obligation in which they will all pay the same amount. When that agreement was made, what we knew was that there were condemnation proceedings and there would have to be a suit filed in district court to stay those proceedings. What we did not know was whether the stay would result in an injunction, whether the injunction would be temporary and tried on permanency. It wasn't. Transcanter dismissed on the eve of trial, as you know. We didn't know whether we would be trying 71 landowners, 40 separate condemnation cases.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but is there anything that lets us know what the hourly rate was for the lawyers to which these 71 clients agreed?
No, there is not. Nor is there any evidence that there was an agreement on an hourly rate. Nor is there any requirement for there to have been an agreement on an hourly rate. One of the issues that we confront in the practice of the law on a regular basis is that your rules, the rules of professional conduct, and our statute, which mirrors it, governing fees in estate and trust proceedings, lists 8 separate factors that control how an attorney's fee is to be determined for reasonableness. One of those factors, the first one, includes 3 different things. And of those 3 things, one is time. And so the number of hours and the hourly rate are essentially 1/8 and then less than 1/8 of the total consideration. In this case, there is no evidence of any agreement about hourly rate. We justified the rate in our affidavits and put on expert evidence to support that, and it's uncontested before you that we didn't charge enough.
Justified the rate. We don't know what the rate is.
Well, we broke it down, Your Honor, in those affidavits to an hourly rate so you could see it. We accounted for the hours.
It's the hourly rate that you charge.
Yes.
Correct.
Yes. Well, that's correct. The hourly rate that I charge.
Regularly, routinely, in your practice of law.
That's correct. And then we calculated a blended rate in Mr. Jordy's affidavit. But we do not represent to the court that that was an agreed-upon hourly rate, and I clearly want you to hear me say, because this is the fact, that there was no agreement about an hourly rate.
Going back, if you don't mind, to Justice Castle's questions, if there is a continuum between a moral obligation and a highly specific legal obligation, remind us what language in those affidavits gives you the result you seek as to establishing a legal obligation.
Well, I'll do that, and I may have to look at my notes to be complete, but the sentence that Justice Castle quoted is the clearest and easiest one to identify, because it says, we acknowledge it is the landowner's obligation to pay the amount sought here, and that amount was not.
So if one of the landowners does not pay and you try to recover fees or reimbursements, affidavit enough to do that? Is that what's in the record?
I would sure think so. It is evidence of a contract. It says there was an agreement to provide services, an acceptance of that, an agreement, and an agreement on the value. So we have an offer, we have an acceptance, and we have an agreement on the terms. There's clearly a contract here. And even if this were a quantum merit...
Are we talking about a written contract or an oral contract?
Well, Your Honor, under Justice Castle's affidavit, not knowing at that point that the Holt County affidavits were also signed by landowners with a written agreement, all the district court could have known was that there was an offer, an acceptance, and an agreement on terms, not a written fee agreement. But it's not a contingent fee, so there doesn't have to be. What we know from Mr. Donovan's
affidavit... Is there anything in the record that says it's not a contingent fee?
Oh, yes, there is, because the landowners say, we agreed to provide services, and we are indebted for this amount. It doesn't say we're indebted for this amount if you collect it. It says we're indebted for this amount. So I think it's very clear that we have an offer and an acceptance and an agreement on the amount.
With sufficient specificity with respect to amount, by incorporating the other stuff.
I definitely think so. I don't think it's even a close question. None of the county judges did. The district court judges, none of them really challenged the specificity of the agreement. Their question was the amount incurred? And I see that under both Judge Kosicek's decision and Judge Gilbride's as being decidedly different. Just give me some evidence. Well, what would that evidence consist of except to have the landowner come in and say, yeah, I owe it? Well, that's what the affidavit says.
The affidavits seem to imply that there's some greater legal universe here, and that not all of the money, the fees talked about, was actually specifically for the condemnation proceedings.
Oh, that's definitely true, Your Honor. Included in the affidavit evidence amount are the proceedings in the district court for the injunctions. And the affidavits of the lawyers, at least, Mr. Jordy and I, are very clear about that. So are some of the landowner affidavits. Mrs. Crumley's in Holt County and Mr. Donovan's in York County come to mind most immediately.
So should under this statute, should TransCanada be responsible for those fees?
Yes, because you decided that was the law in City of Gordon versus Roots, RUSD. In that case, an inverse condemnation proceeding, you specifically held that a district court suit to enjoin the condemnation proceedings, which resulted in the dismissal of the condemnation proceedings, was compensable under this statute.
Because of relatedness.
That's correct. Because the decision was that the district court proceeding was a necessary element of defending the land against the eminent domain taking. And here, the landowners had to file the district court proceeding to present the constitutional issues which could not be resolved when this court heard Thompson versus Heineman, because you tied 4-3 on standing. William Jennings Bryan didn't envision that. He lobbied for that part of the Constitution. Your Honors,
It's rare.
Once, I think. Your Honors, I think what we've proven is this. Number one, and to take it at its worst for us, if this were simply a quantum Merowit case in which the client acknowledges the debt, we're entitled to recover. And the client acknowledges the debt. Number two, the affidavits repeatedly say that the clients requested services and we agreed to and did provide them and that the amount is reasonable. Number three, the evidence was established by affidavit in the finest tradition of your jurisprudence since 1867. Unbroken jurisprudence. Number four, there's an interesting analogous statute. The federal statute on condemnation, which we cite, 42 U.S.C. section 4654, as I recall the number, uses some of the same words, and the United States Supreme Court has said that that statute contemplates payment not to the owner, but to the lawyer. And so this whole idea about reimbursement isn't between TransCanada and the landowner, it's to fulfill the obligation of the landowner to the lawyer. That obligation is uncontroverted. The parties to the agreement, the lawyer and the clients, all agree. We have a contract, we have a deal, the money is owed. The judgments of the district courts of Saline County, Nance, Boone, and Rock counties should be affirmed. The judgments of the district courts of Holt County and York County should be reversed and remanded with directions to reinstate the judgments of the county court, and further directions to all district courts, send this back to the county courts to enter judgment for the fees. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there time for rebuttal?
4 minutes.
4 minutes and 3 seconds. Mr. Powers.
I think Mr. Dahm had just explained the crux of the problem here. He says they have a fee agreement that does all these things. That fee agreement's never been offered into evidence. It certainly wasn't offered at Holt County. And certainly has never been offered. And the question is, what does that say and what do these clients incur? And it's not whether the work was done. We've heard that, whether they have a moral obligation to pay based on the success. And for him to say that the judges, Gobry and Judge Kosicek, definitely question the specificity of it. And because the reason it's important is to actually incur. These are awards against government units or agencies of the state. Contingencies are fees based on outcome determinative, where you decide what the fee will be after the fact, are not allowed under this statute. That's why there may be 46 cases and maybe 100 more where attorney fees have been awarded, but not under this statute. As far as affidavit evidence, whether it was admissible, there's no case where this has been decided by this court that we're aware of.
Let's assume for a moment that you're correct. What is your position on remanding all of these things down to the county court for further evidence?
Our position is that's up to the discretion of the appellate court. We think that it should be remanded with directions to dismiss. Just like if this was a negligence case that came before the court and you determined that the evidence was insufficient, they've had a full opportunity to present their evidence, even with the affidavits, even with the objections not being allowed, and they could not meet the elements of the burden of proof. It's not that hard. It's simple. It's, what is the fee agreement? What did you agree at the get-go? If it changed, then specify it. Did you invoice it? What evidence do you have? All these conclusionary statements that there's been an agreement isn't the best evidence of the agreements. When our objection, the affidavits morphed over time to start to say, well, there was more of an agreement, we think they should pay. Judge Kotuchek specifically found the blended rate was something that was never agreed to. How you can have a client a relationship and a clear and precise agreement that is enforceable to show that the client incurs legal expense without having at least an agreement on the rate or how it's going to be determined until the end of the case, it certainly lacks specificity and is more of a moral obligation, not an enforceable contract. And that language is about whether it's an agreement isn't in all the affidavits. And regardless, that language is not sufficient to show the legal obligation that is required to show that you've actually incurred it. And as far as reimbursement, we don't think that that issue is not outcome determinative, but we do think that there's a reason it's in there. The reason it says reimburse for actually incurred, again, is these are awards against the agency of the state. And as awards against the state, we have to, and I mean, there, this won't cause a saying that's required testimony, live testimony, because this is the only issue that will ever be tried under the statute, because it's only after an abandonment that you get here. And that's when you need the testimony, and so that the state agency is assured and given an opportunity to question, what was the agreement? Is this something that, because they've abandoned, that's become a contingency? This smells and feels like a contingency, but they have it, but it's they say it is not, and that's a contingency, but what the rate and how it was determined is nowhere in the record until after the fact. There's no, the question is, did the client, not the lawyers, agree to the rate? Do they agree that this is how it's going to be charged at the get-go? Or afterwards, after it was abandoned, say, here's what we think we ought to charge you. And is that okay? And at that point, they may say yes. Apparently, they did with the affidavits. But they have to say yes at the beginning. And why is he, what? We're not looking at the agreement. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That takes us to the next.